This is the Pulse of New Hampshire. I am J-Dog, and joining me is a true Renaissance man. He is an author. He is an athlete. He is a scholar. He is also a baseball awards presenter, a doting grandfather, a swell dresser, and a great dancer as well, Eddie Papowski's number one fan. He is the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. It's Mr. Tom Rapio. Tom, how are you?
Good, Jay. And like I said, now that the world's opened up and we're all performing now, we're all out there, I'm bringing you everywhere I go because that's the greatest introduction, specifically being a doting grandfather and dancer, because I'm doing a lot of dancing with my three-year-old granddaughter, Savannah. So thank you. Thank you for saying that. This is going to be a delightful show today. You know why, Jay?
A whole lot of laughs.
A lot of laughs. So without further ado, I want to bring in Justin McKinney. Everybody knows Justin if you live in New Hampshire. And Justin, thank you for joining me. You and I go way back. I just want to, before we get into today's topic, just want to give a big shout out to my prior week's guest, Jennifer McGrath, who talked about the Northeast Delta Dental Foundation, some serious work that we do to give back to underserved populations in New Hampshire, because as Justin knows, because he hangs out with me occasionally, everybody deserves a healthy smile, but not everybody can afford it. So the Northeast Delta Dental Foundation gives back to the underserved populations. So Jennifer was on. And for those of you that are listening to this on October 15th and October 16th, there's still time to go down to Memorial Field. And we have the 30th anniversary of the Making Strides for Breast Cancer Research and Fundraising. And that'll be at noon on Sunday, October 16th. And Northeast Delta Dental made a $50,000 contribution to really stimulate the fundraising for breast cancer awareness and research. So those are serious topics. But with me today, and the 15th and 16th, is Justin McKinney. So Justin, I mean, you know what I really love about you is that you, of course, make people laugh in a generally a G-rated way, but you also understand that part of your work is serious work because, for example, when you have performed in front of our board of directors at our long-range planning retreats, most recently in Maine, not too long ago, you are really part of the strategic planning. And when Northeast Delta Dental does well, we can give back to the community. So I want to thank you as well for not only being funny, but for really being, you know, strategic and a servant leader. So thank you, Justin.
Happy to do it, Tom. It's a lot of fun. I've done a few, at least two, if not three events with you guys. And it's been a blast.
And you get an A+, everybody. You have people in stitches. Before I forget, because we will get back to your background, because it is all about you. But I really, when you performed for us in June, the best one was when, you know, you said, like, well, someone asked you to move. You know, we all hate moving stuff, right? Our own stuff, let alone a friend's stuff, right? And then, like, you said, well, I think I might have COVID, you know, and so it kind of segued. And of course, that was the excuse not to help someone move.
Sure.
But that then segued into offline. I don't know if you knew this, but there then was a sort of offline, you know, chat room type discussion on, are people using COVID, even if they don't have COVID, as a way of not showing up for something? And it was a big, long thread. So there's always an element of, I don't know, truth in some of your comedy. But let's get back to you. So how did you actually start your career in comedy? I mean, I'm used to the Paul Narduzzi's of the world and so forth. But how did you start your career?
I think, you know, it's something I'd always wanted to do when I was, I think in junior high was when I first thought of the idea of being a comedian. And then you get up into high school and then, you know, life kind of, well, what am I going to do? How do you even do that? You don't know how to do it. So, you know, I'd gotten a job at the, I was a deputy sheriff in rural Maine in the 90s. That's where I got hired there. And I just tried an open mic in my 20s. I got into my 20s. I went down to Boston, tried a 3-minute open mic, and, you know, went from there. Just kept going back every you know, 4 or 6 months or whatever for a couple of years. I did that. And then I decided, you know what, I'm going to, in 93, I took a leave of absence from the department so that I had a year where I could come back and keep my seniority and everything. I had 1 year to decide what I was going to do. And I had a really good, that first year, it just felt right. And then I stayed on part-time for a few years just in case, you know, it wasn't working out. I could go back and not have to go to the police academy again. So it was like, you know, it was this whole thing, you know, trying to decide what I was going to do. But once I got my first year or two under my belt, I just knew that it was something I wanted to pursue.
Awesome. That's a great story.
I mean, while I was young, you know, it's like, I didn't have kids yet. I wasn't married. You know, if ever was the time to do it, it was then. So, so that's what I did.
When I graduated from Harvard in 1978, we had Rodney Dangerfield as one of the class speakers. He was hot then. And the question that we all had for him, and I'm going to ask you, is when you were in high school, junior high, were you always funny growing up? I mean, some comedians like Johnny Carson, for example, were really more introverted. And others, as I've kind of studied the field, were always sort of the class clown. So where did you fit in that spectrum?
Actually, before I answer that question, Tom, I just want to mention, because you did go to Harvard, and I was going to go to Harvard. I got into two schools, Harvard and Southern Maine Community College. And I ended up going with Southern Maine Community College. It was just a little bit in my budget, but I almost went to Harvard. I went to the community college instead. But
remember, Southern Maine Community College, that is the Harvard of the North, by the way.
It's a beautiful campus.
It is.
And it actually was, when I started, to be fair, it was Southern Maine Vocational Technical Institute. And then it got upgraded to a community college. So it actually changed names. So,
but it's always been known as the Harvard of the North. I mean, some people think McGill is known as Harvard of the North, but no, it's Southern Maine Community College.
Southern Maine Community College. It took me, I went to school. Where'd you go? For 4 years, 5 years? How many years in Harvard?
Believe me, in those days, your parents, you know, 4 years. And let me just tell you how things have changed. I know you've got kids, but like, you know how like, when kids graduate from college, they got to find themselves, you know, they go 6 months to Europe or a year off, whatever.
It's a tough world. Yes,
it is. So in my day, Harvard graduation was on a Friday. And my trip to Europe was taking Saturday and Sunday off. And I worked the following Monday at John Hancock. So things have changed. I'm not sure for better or for worse, but I'm sure you're dealing with that with your kids. So anyway,
yeah, I don't expect them leaving before age 25. But anyway, so yeah, as far as being funny, to get back to your original question, it's funny, you know, back in school, you had like the class clown who was like you'd have that class clown that would do like inappropriate things, like, you know, get in trouble at the school, you know, because they're tipping over trash cans, or they're setting up stuff. They're doing pranks on people. You know, they're putting tacks on chairs, whatever. I just could remember saying funny things that would, then even the teacher would laugh. Like, you know what I mean? So I wasn't crossing any lines, but I wasn't so introverted because I wouldn't say I was introverted, but I just wasn't that. I don't think people, if you went back to my classmates, they were like, oh, we knew he was going to be a comedian. Like, I don't think you're going to get any of that. But I could remember always having funny thoughts and saying funny things and being, you know, just like kind of a funny kid, you know?
Interesting. Now, is there one local or national comedian or performer that inspires you, or in general, is there anyone that inspires you in and outside of your field?
Well, when I think of inspiring, I'm thinking like inspiring my material, right? If you're thinking of that, it's my wife. She says some ridiculous things. And my kids as well, the things that they, you know, life inspires me. You know, when it comes to, you know, performers, I mean, I always, you know, there's so many from Carlin to Pryor to Jerry Seinfeld to Rodney Dangerfield was, you know, all them in their own way. I think, you know, I was impressed and inspired me a little bit. You know, Carson, my dad used to stay up and watch Carson all the time. You know, and that's when I first realized I might want to be a comedian, was because Carson would say things. And I remember being like, oh, I had that thought. You know what I mean? Like some of his monologue, some of his jokes. I'm like, oh, that's how I was thinking. That's how my brain kind of works.
That's good.
Yeah.
Interesting that, and that you would say that. I used to love when Carson had like Don Rickles on, and Don would make his eyeballs would bolt out, and then and of course Rodney Dangerfield would be tugging at his, you know, tie or whatever. But you're right, he had that kind of subtle sense of humor. So this is something I've always wanted to ask you, which is, so as funny things happen with your kids or your wife, or you know, and something that you experience at the gas station, do you keep notes on that so that you can sort of transform that into, you know, use as a joke or something later on for a performance?
I do. Actually, the iPhone has the notes app, which is great. It used to be pen and paper, but now I just put everything in that note app. And the beauty of it is, perfect example, dentist or dental. If I'm going to do a show for you, I can put in tooth, dentist, dental, and all the jokes I've ever written about that pop up. And that's how I kind of, file everything, is so that's how I kind of do it. And I do have to like stop and write stuff down and go to my little notepad.
It's amazing, Jay. And when Justin performs for us, he has the dentist in stitches, because as one simple example, they're known for wearing blue blazers and things like that. And oh my God, he has them rip roaring. So justinmckinney.com, Justin with an O, McKinney, all one word, .com. You can see him through YouTube. So Jay, I think it's time for a break, right?
Yeah, we'll take the break and get back to you alongside Justin McKinney, comedian, local comedian as well, by the way, and nationally known. On the Pulse of New Hampshire, this is Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and we'll take a break here on the Pulse of New Hampshire. Welcome back. This is Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I am J-Dog alongside Tom Raffio, the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. And this week's guest is local comedian Justin McKinney, and we're going to show him your website in just a bit. And I know he's got tour dates and everything like that coming up, and it's a good website. You can see all the clips on YouTube as well, and take it away, Tom.
And it's Justin McKinney, one word, .com, but it's Justin with an O. So I want to pause you, because you don't know this, Justin, but when we were, the first time we were engaging you, I think this was after Paul Nardizzi, who was quite good. I loved the way he was saying about the O in your name. So would you describe that? And I know when you do self-deprecation on your performances, you talk about your dad putting the O and all that. So
yes,
tell us about the O.
Okay. Well, and big fan of Paul, by the way, Paul Nardizzi. And Paul, when I started, he was doing it, and he was one of my favorites back then. So I really am impressed by that guy, Paul. So as far as my O, I've made it, you know, I do it in my act. I find that when I leave shows now at the end of the night, I like to kind of close with a little bit of a story so that when people leave, they remember it. Because if you go into, you know, search me on it, oh, let me see if he's got Instagram, and you don't know it's an O and you put in the I, you won't find me. You'll think I don't have a page. So it's been a little bit of a nightmare. And I think I've told you, Tom, I think you know the story. Like, I can't even just tell people it's Justin with an O, because, you know, if you're Brian with a Y, everyone knows where the Y goes. There's no more questions. But I'm like, it's Justin with an O. And they're like, J-O-S-T-I-N. Like it happens all the time. Like, I got a J-U-S-T-O-N. I have to spell the whole thing out. And I think I told you it would be like being named Tim with an O. You know what I mean? That would get annoying if you got to, like, you know, it's because it's pronounced Justin. And my dad, the real story was, I asked him one day, I go, Dad, it's been a huge pain. I'm always getting stuff changed. Why did you do it? And he's like, oh, because you were born just on time. Get it? Only just on time. And I'm like, first of all, it could have been just in time. It's the same dumb joke. You got the joke wrong. So as I say, I came into the world as a bad dad joke, a butchered dad joke. And I ended up becoming a comedian.
you had everybody in stitches when you were saying, well, you know, if it was Brian with a Y, people know where he goes, but not Justin with an O. I think that sort of second subtlety on it really really did the trick. Now, you did explain how you do tailor your performance, or I explained how you've done that, you know, for our dentists, and you take notes on your iPhone. But so in your career, I know because we prep, you and I prep when you perform for us. So do you typically study your audience, or at least be aware of who you're performing, and then at that point do the final preparation and maybe tailor some jokes for that audience?
I do. I think that's a big, you know, probably 50% of the work that I do is corporate or private. And it's because I do take I believe it's because I do take that time, and I do, you know, who's my audience? What do they do? You know, last week it was insurance agents, or, you know, car dealers, whatever it is. Like, I have, all right, what jokes do I have about that? What stuff do I think they would like or they would get? And then there's always questions I might go in and be like, you know, if something's I've always pondered, I can ask them, because that's the group to do it. So I find that's the challenge of it. And it's also the fun part of doing the corporate. You learn all about, and sometimes I've written jokes for a specific group, and then that joke makes it into my act, my regular act, because I'm like, oh, that's a good joke. Like, you don't only have to be this group of people to get that joke.
Your jokes are so universal. So I'm not surprised to hear that.
And Tom, just on that, I think it's kind of interesting, because I have an example that just popped into my head. When I did the joke, I told the story about you guys about how my wife does not let my kids go to bed without brushing their teeth. And even though my kid's like, he's 11 and he's passed out on the couch, she's like, we're holding him up, like me and my two kids, and brushing the teeth while it's coming down the aisle. And I made a joke about how it was like a frat house. Remember that joke? I go, it's like he's passed out of frat, but instead of, you know, drawing on you, we do hygiene. You know, you wake up. Remember that was the whole thing I wrote? Well, that bit worked well there. And I since did that at a regular, and it works anywhere. Like, it doesn't need to be dental people to understand that joke, you know?
And parents can definitely relate to a pre-teenager who you're trying to teach good oral health habits to. So you just released your fifth 1 hour special on YouTube on The Bright Side. So tell us, and I know that was on Amazon Prime and Comedy Central. So tell us how that works, and how is the overall experience, and how's the business model on that?
So basically, I've produced some myself, self-released, sold through my website. I've had Comedy Central. I had a 1 hour Comedy Central special. I had a half hour Comedy Central special. I had two specials that were on Amazon Prime, which were free if you had Prime for a few years. And then this new one, to be honest, the inflation and the economy and how much it was going to cost. It's like, I didn't want to sell it through my website, and I didn't want to put it on Prime because I've already done that. So strategically, and because it's free, I said, why don't I put it on YouTube? A lot of comedians are doing that now, where they're putting it on YouTube. It introduces you to a new audience, someone that might not have seen it. And sure enough, some of the comments have been, I'm so glad I clicked on this, or how have I not heard of you? So that was kind of the idea. So I released it a month ago. It was in September, the beginning of September, and it has like 119,000 views. So I don't know what a good number is, but I was thinking, if I get over 100,000 people to watch this, that's a pretty good amount of people. And
that's impressive. Yeah. And how does the business model work for you?
It's, well, the premiere, when I premiered it on a Thursday night, there weren't any ads or anything running. So the business model is, you know, there are ads running, which you can hit the skip ad button. You know what I mean? So there's when you're talking about business, I assume you're talking about, how do you make money off that? And then the other thing is, I still own all the audio, because that's the other thing. I did a special with Warner Brothers. My 1 hour Comedy Central special was produced by Warner Brothers. So they own that. I cannot put those bits on Facebook or any social media. They'll flag it because they own it. They own the recording of it. I can re-record it, but I'm not allowed to earn the money off that, the ad money, through these other ways. So this one, that's the other thing. I own it all. So I can take the audio. I put it on Sirius XM radio. I can run it on my social all I want. And there's ways to make ad money there. And then the other return on the investment is people see it, and then they hopefully want to come see a live show. you know, if I'm at one of my theaters coming up. So, you know, trickiest thing is letting people know, hey, if you come see me now, you're not going to see what you just saw. It will be new, almost all new stuff, you know? So that's the trick, is having to keep writing material.
And that's, I have my notes emphasized to the listening audience, is new material all the time, refreshed. It's not the same stuff that, you know, Justin did 2 years ago. Because I must say, and I think I told you this offline, when we were listening to Rodney Dangerfield back in 1978, we were, oh my God, we couldn't wait. But then he used most of the material that we had already heard on Johnny Carson. So I said, so it was still okay. But Justin, not Justin though, not Justin.
Well, I do, Tom, I do, to be fair, I do, you know, it's, I do mix in some, it's funny. I've come to the realization that when I don't do some of the old stuff, people will say, oh, I was hoping you did that. I was hoping you did this joke. So what I try to do is I start out with 20, 30 minutes of new stuff. Like if I'm going back to a theater, maybe mix in one or two from this special, one or two from that special, one or two from that one. So the only way, every show is different and it's always got lots of new stuff, but I will occasionally pull out a joke from one of my past specials and mix it in. And sometimes they ask me to, and you know, in the audience, or if it's spontaneous, something happens in the audience, it'll remind me of a joke and I'll do that one. So it's not always all new every time. I mean, I couldn't do that, but
yeah. And I think you have the perfect balance. It's no different going to, you know, the Eagles concert. I mean, you want to hear some of their new stuff, but if you don't hear their core, you know, five songs that we all grew up with, you're disappointed. No, you found the perfect balance. And speaking of that, and Justin's website again, and you can reach him at Justin with an O, T-O-N, McKinney.com, is that you also work for nonprofits to help sometimes raise, you know, money for their charity. So I really think you're an awesome servant leader, in the extent that obviously you have to make money to stay in business, but you're also aware that you can be very helpful in fundraising. So I just want to commend you for that. So thank you for being good to the New Hampshire community. And how blessed are we that, you know, you're right here in our midst. You know, it's awesome. So speaking of that, so do you want, and do you think your kids want to follow in your footsteps?
Well, would I want them to? You know, I'd want them to do whatever they have a passion for, really, right? But I got to be honest, I probably would discourage them from law enforcement, just because I had done that, just because I wouldn't have said this 5 years ago, but the climate right now, I mean, unless things change, you know, we need great people to want to be cops, and I'm happy they do. But from a selfish standpoint of my children, it's just the stuff that they could, you know, I don't know. I just feel like the society doesn't have their back right now, like they should. And that, you know, being a parent with that protective aspect. So as far as that, I would try to steer them out of that. But as far as a comedian, it's a really tough job. It's a really tough job to make a living. But if they were passionate about it, anything they wanted to do, and my kids are funny, man. They do say things that are funny. So far I've not heard one of them say that they wanted to be a comedian, but they continue to say funny stuff, and they make me laugh all the time.
And thank you. And I think that's great advice. I tell this to my kids, you're going to be working another 35 or 40 years. So you better love what you do, because then it's really not work. Justin, thanks for what you do for helping raise funds for nonprofits. The website is justinmckinney.com. You're hilarious. You're rated G, so you don't have to worry in the audience. We'll have you. We're definitely going to have you back. And I think you're really part of the Northeast Delta Dental family as well. So thank you for being right within our community, yet, you know, nationally recognized, and hope everybody takes a look at you at YouTube. And thank you, Justin, again for, you know, really helping, I think, make it a more peaceful life with a little bit of appropriate humor. So thank you.
Yep. Thank you. And, you know, the YouTube special is available now, and I would say it's more PG-13. I do sometimes, but I don't get vulgar. You're correct. But I don't want anyone to think G is like 6 years old.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't want to
Disney. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, I do. That's why I do so much corporate. In corporate, I'm actually cleaner. I'm even cleaner at a corporate than if you pay to see me at a theater. I push the envelope a little, but nothing that I get very few complaints in 25 years. I don't think anyone's ever said I was too dirty, put it that way.
PG-13 is perfectly fine. Yeah. Thank you, Justin McKinney. Jay?
Thanks again. Another edition of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. And for Justin McKinney, for Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio, I am J-Dog. And this is Northeast Delta Dental Radio. We'll have another edition next week here on the Pulse of New Hampshire.